Okay, reading from Srimad Bhagavatam. Sixth canto, chapter 18. Evam shushrushitastatah. Bhagavan kashyapastriha. Rahasya paramaprito. Ditti maha vinanjacha. Evam. Thus. Shushru shritaha. Being served. Tata. O dear one. Bhagavan. The powerful. Kashyapaha. Kashyapa. Striya, by the woman. Prahasya, smiling. Paramapritaha, being very pleased. Ditim, to ditti. Aha, said. Abhinanja, approving. Cha, also. Translation, O my dear one, the most powerful sage Kashyapa, being extremely pleased by the mild behavior of his wife Ditti, smiled and spoke to her as follows. So there's no purport to this text nor the next text, so we'll read the two next texts and the third and the fourth text, which have a purport. So text 32. Shri Kashyapa Vacha Param Varaya Vamoru Pritaste Hamanindate Striha Martare Suprite Ka Kama Iha Chagamaha. Kashyapa Muni said, O beautiful woman, O irreproachable lady, since I am very much pleased by your behavior, you may ask me for any benediction you want. If a husband is pleased, what desires are difficult for his wife to obtain, either in this world or in the next? These are very romantic statements. Not a class for sannyasi, anyway. So next, text 33 to 34 was also very interesting. It has no purport. Anyway. Patireva hi nari nahum daivatam paramam smritam manasa sarva bhutanam vasudeva sriya pataki saheva devata lingar nama rupa vikalpatakai ijite bhagavan pumbi sri vischa pati rupa trik. A husband is the supreme demigod for a woman. Anyway, we'll talk about it. Don't worry about it. Ladies, just hold on for a second. It has a happy ending to it. The supreme personality of Godhead, Lord Vasudeva, the husband of the goddess of fortune, is situated in everyone's heart and is worshipped through various names and forms of the demigods, by fruit of workers. Similarly, a husband represents the Lord as the object of worship for a woman. Don't get scared. So, purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. The Lord says in Bhagavad Gita in the 9th chapter, text 23, Yepyanya devata vakta yajante shradayan vitaka te pimam me vikonte ha yajancha vedi purvakam. Whatever a man may sacrifice to other gods, O son of Kunti, is really meant for me alone, but is offered without true understanding. The demigods are various assistants who act like the hands and legs of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One who is not in direct touch with the Supreme Lord and cannot conceive of the exalted position of the Lord is sometimes advised to worship the demigods as various parts of the Lord. If women, who are usually very much attached to their husbands, worship their husbands as representatives of Vasudev, the women benefit just as Ajamil benefited by calling for Narayan, his son. Ajamil was concerned with his son, but because of his attachment to the name of Narayana, he attained salvation simply by chanting that name. In India, a husband is still called Pati Guru, the husband's spiritual master. If the husband and wife are attached to one another for the advancement in Krishna consciousness, the relationship of cooperation is very effective for such advancement. Although the names of Indra and Agni are sometimes uttered in the Vedic mantras, Indraya, Swaha, Agni, Swaha, the Vedic sacrifices are actually performed for the satisfaction of Lord Vishnu. As long as one is very attached to material sense gratification, the worship of the demigods or the worship of one's husband is recommended. So, we will explain this. Anyway, as far as the story is concerned, Kashyap is basically making the same mistake he made before. And that is being bewildered by his attachment to his wife. And the mistake he made before this whole story started was that he became bewildered and had a relationship with his wife, Diti, at an inappropriate time. And therefore, he had two cute little boys being born, Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu. So you would think he would learn, you know, don't do what your wife wants all the time. Because if you do, you know, you're going to have demons coming and other problems. But, you know, it's just somehow or other you didn't learn. It's said that someone who is a leader can make or should make many mistakes, but he should only make the same mistake once. So if you don't learn from your mistakes, there's a problem there. Actually, it's better to learn by hearing. Actually, Prabhupada said that there's two ways you can learn. One is by doing, and the other one is by hearing. The more intelligent person learns by hearing. Like if you hear the material world is a place of ignorance, okay. You have faith, you accept it. Or place of misery, you accept it. Now, why do you have to try it out? Isn't it? I mean, but some people are just determined, in spite of hearing about that, to try it out. It's like one time I was explaining to one of my disciples, you know, wherever you go, from the highest planet to the lowest planet, from this country to that country, it's all miserable. I mean, what are you going to do when you go from one country to another? I mean, sometimes people from America travel to Europe to see the changing of the guards at Buckingham Palace or what, Big Ben? Actually, Big Ben is on vacation right now. They're repairing him, you know, the clock in the UK. What are you going to see? Or they go to Australia, which I go to sometimes, and they see the Harbour Bridge or they see the opera, Sydney Opera is famous. All these different things like that. Well, what are you going to see? But still they do that. So anyway, I was explaining to that one disciple, and she said, but I really want to see the icebergs. Okay. You know what an iceberg is? Iceberg is like these big ice cubes. Like when sometimes you have a soda or something, there's ice cubes in the So she takes a boat and spends literally probably about $10,000, you know, on these cruises to see the icebergs in Alaska. And brings back pictures of the icebergs. And I said, I could just, like, look at my glass of water with ice cubes in it. And it's the same thing. Take pictures and it would look exactly the same. So, anyway, so sometimes sometimes people learn by hearing, sometimes people learn by doing, but it appears in this particular case, Kashyapa, he didn't learn. You know, don't be manipulated by someone else who is just extreme, especially his wife is extremely devotional, wants something and just appears, as we said, quoting Prabhupada, too much devotion is a sign of a thief. You know, appears like they love you or she loves you. I mean, a wife can love her husband. That's not the point. But if she loves the husband, she'll be interested in the husband's welfare, not in bribing the husband, which is really what's happening here. She's just bribing the husband to get what she wants. Now, to talk about the more controversial subject matter here, a husband is the supreme demigod for a woman. And the wife is worship. A husband represents the Lord as the object of worship for a woman. Let me compare that to injunctions in the Vedic literature, other injunctions in the Vedic literature. For example, in the Vedic literatures, you have, as Prabhupada mentions here, injunctions to worship demigods. You have injunctions, as we mentioned the other day in class, that if you want to eat meat, what should you do? Does anyone remember? Once a month, on the full moon night, you cut the goat's throat, and you whisper into the goat's ear, "Mamsa kadati." Next life, you're going to get a chance to eat meat. Mamsa means eating me. It's interesting, the name for meat in Sanskrit is, "You should eat me," or "You are going to eat me." So, anyway, so you have that Vedic injunction, yeah. There are different Vedic injunctions for people in different orders of life. That's all. I mean, it's very simple. So worship of Indra, worship of the demigods is recommended for those who are very ritualistic. And therefore you have the whole 99% of the verses in the Rig Veda are statements about worship of Vishnu, but Indra, mostly Indra. But you have other verses in the Rig Veda, if you look really closely, that say, Yajna Vai Vishnu, which means the yajna is actually Vishnu, or the sacrifice is actually Vishnu. And so many hymns, so many Puranas for people in different modes of nature, right? You have 18 Puranas, 6 for people in the mode of ignorance, 6 for people in the mode of passion, 6 for people in the mode of goodness. You find injunctions, it's worship Lord Shiva, and worship Indra, worship Brahma. Brahma is hardly worshipped except in Pushkara in India. Actually, he was cursed not to be worshipped. He made some big mistakes, but that's another issue. So, different shlokas for different folks, as they say. Different injunctions. I mean, just like even in Varnashram. Like, for example, one person is a grihastha, another person is a sannyasi. I'm not going to follow the injunctions meant for grihasthas. You know, be nice to your wife. What? Forget it. What are you talking about? So, so I'm going to follow the injunctions for sannyasi. So there are different injunctions for different people. So, however, people are attached and you have to recognize that. Just like Narada Muni, when he was advising Dhruva Maharaj, first of all, he tried to advise Dhruva Maharaj to go back home and behave himself like a kid. You know, go back and be with your parents. And when he saw that that was ineffective, he said, well, you worship Vishnu if you want to get a kingdom greater than that of Lord Brahma. So it's not that he thought getting the kingdom greater than that of Lord Brahma was better than anything else in this world or the ultimate goal, but he understood that he had to preach according to time, place, and circumstance. As we mentioned the verse yesterday, akama, sarva karma, moksha karma, dharati. Tivrena bhakti yogini yajeta purusham param. The one is full of material desires, desirous of liberation, or free of desires. One should worship Krishna with enthusiasm. And even in the Vedic literatures, even in the Bhagavatam, you have injunctions about meditating on the universal form. You know, so that may be applicable for some people who are impersonalists. It's like sometimes I go into a devotee's house and they have this big poster of the universal form. And I'm thinking, what am I supposed to do with it? You know, the bones of the trees are the bones of the Supreme Personality of God, or the stars or eyes. You know, all these different things. It's just like, I can't relate to it. And it's a verse in the Bhagavatam. So what am I supposed to do? I can't relate to that particular type of meditation because it's not meant for me. So in the same thing, in the household situation here, I'm not saying that wife should hate the husband or ignore the husband, but as far as worshiping the husband as being absolute, because here you have like supreme demigod for a woman. I mean, that supreme means, what's not the name of some singing group, you know, the Supremes. You've heard about them before. Supreme means the topmost. In the word, let's see, look at this. Pati eva hi narinam daivatam. Yeah, demigod. It means demigod. So, I mean, is that really what wives should be doing? Yes and no. Yes, if they're just like materially attached, which Prabhupada talks about, he mentioned the last paragraph is the key for all these injunctions. As long as one is very much is like extremely, not just very. When you have two words like very much, it's one thing to say very attached, it's another thing to say very much. That means very, very, very much attached to material sense gratification, the worship of the demigods, and actually, Prabhupada quotes the verse aviti purvakam, generally not recommended. Anyway, kamais taista ritigyana prabhajantate nadevata. The same thing. Kamais taista ritigyana prabhajantate nadevata. Those whose minds were overcome by lust, then they worship the demigods. So we're not going to criticize someone for worshiping the demigods if their mind is absorbed in lust, as long as they recognize that the demigods are actually servants of Krishna. This is one interesting verse which I quote often when I preach to Hindus. Whew. Yastu Narayanam Devam Brahma Rudradi Daivata Samitpa Viksheta Sapashandi Bhavetruvam. The one who thinks that the demigods and Narayan are equivalent, like demigods like Brahma and Rudra, that person is a Pashandi. Pashandi means like an outcast. So I make it very clear to people. But I don't stop them from worshiping demigods. For example, I spend a lot of time in this country called Fiji, which some of you may be aware of. There's one devotee, she's not in class, but anyway, she's from Fiji, who lives here in Slovenia, Braja Prem. And they're very attached to worshiping demigods. So what I do with them is I say that, all right, you keep worshiping your demigods, and put them on a little lower level on the altar. Put Krishna on the high level. And when you offer something to them, take some prasadam from Krishna's level. You know, offer to Krishna the boga. And then you give it to them. Just like they do in Bhuvaneshwara. In Bhuvaneshwara, which is sometimes called Jai Shri, it's not called Jai Shri Panchatawa, but anyway, it's sometimes called Gupta Kashi. Because Kashi was burnt to ashes, and so Gupta means hidden, Kashi. Kashi is a place of Lord Shiva. So Benares, Bhuvaneshwara, the main deity is Lord Shiva. So what they do in Bhuvaneshwara is they take the remnants of Lord Jagannath, and Jagannath Puri is probably about 30 kilometers away, and they take Lord Jagannath's remnants and put it in a taxi and drive the remnants to Bhuvaneshwar and give to Lord Shiva. And Lord Shiva loves Mahaprasadam. Just like that story in the Chaitanya Mangal, that some of you may be familiar with. When Narada Muni got Mahaprasadam, he was dancing in ecstasy, and Lord Shiva said, "Did you save anything for me?" And Narada Muni said, "No, I didn't. I ate everything." And then they discovered some Mahaprasadam under Narada Muni's fingernail. And Lord Shiva took it, and he started dancing in ecstasy and almost destroyed the whole universe in his dancing. He was so ecstatic. And then Parvati stopped him because, she's concerned. She doesn't want any of us killed by Lord Shiva's ecstasy. And he explained, "I took Mahaprasadam." And she said, "Did you save any for me?" And he said, "No, you're Maya." She is Maya. I mean, energy. You're Maya. And she got really upset with him. And she basically got up angry with her husband. So as far as accepting your husband as your worshipful deity, here's Parvati, who's one of the best wives. If you ever do a marriage sacrifice, you recite different names of different respectable couples. And Lord Shiva and Parvati is two of the names. Actually, Ravana and Mandodari are other two names. Because Mandodari also spoke back to her husband, Ravan. Of course, my advice is if your husband is Ravan, please don't speak back to him. Because you get in trouble. He may take you for prasadam or something like that. So you have Parvati talking back to Lord Shiva, and she said, "I'm going to show you that I'm worthy of prasadam." And she worshipped Lord Vishnu, and Lord Vishnu agreed to not only give her prasadam, but to give all of us Mahaprasadam. That story is in the Chaitanya Mangal. So we see the demigods, they love prasadam. If you really want to please the demigods, you give them Mahaprasadam from Lord Vishnu. So that's the real way to worship. So that's how I deal with it in Fiji, because they're very attached to the demigods. I mean, they're so attached, when they join the Krishna consciousness movement, their parents tell them that if you stop worshiping the demigods, you're going to get very sick, you're going to die, your husband's going to leave you, your wife's going to leave you, and they get real nervous about the whole thing. And if, God forbid, they get the flu, then their parents tell them, "That's because you didn't worship Durga." You got plenty of people who get the flu who worship Durga, too, so. And everyone's dying, even people who worship the demigods. So Krishna says in the Gita, don't disturb the minds of those who are materially attached, but encourage them to work in a spirit of devotion. So this is really what's going on here. If you can't worship Krishna, then you can worship something that's bigger than you. Just like in primitive cultures, forgive me if I'm criticizing I'm not culture here, just like they call the noble sages. Forget the word right now. But the noble savages. You ever heard that expression before? It's an American expression. Like the American Indians. And actually the Indians in South America, and probably some of the native people here, like the Denovians or something like that. They had some worship. They worship something bigger than themselves. In South America, for example, they have these temples to the sun god. And, of course, unfortunately, they were offering human beings to the sun god. They have these pyramids in Mexico, and they were offering human beings. Wasn't such a good idea. But at least the point is they were respecting something greater than themselves. That's the nature of human beings, to actually look for something greater, to worship something greater. And that's a step, the first step in self-realization. That's brought out in the second canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, actually. When the universal form is described, the Lord of the heart is described. These are different steps in self-realization. I mean, for example, when I was young and I would go for camping trips, I would look up at the stars and just like think, oh, how wonderful and big everything is and how small I am. Okay, that's a step. So the wife worshiping the husband is a step. And it's even better if he's a devotee. She worships the husband. So, and also, it keeps society peaceful. I mean, if she's not a devotee, really, and she's at least devoted to her husband, and her husband happens to be like a devotee, then it keeps things peaceful. And so there's nothing wrong with that injunction. However, reading again Prabhupada's last sentence here, as long as one is very much attached to material sense gratification, the worship of the demigods or the worship of one's husband is recommended. So, what I recommend, if one is not very much attached to material sense gratification, then you worship Krishna. And both the husband and wife are devotees worshiping Krishna, and they can also be attached to each other, but not that the wife is doing puja for the husband, to the husband, said, not for the husband. You know, Sri Husband Charana Padma, Kevala Bhakati Sadma, the lotus feet of my husband are the only way to achieve bhakti. Sorry if I'm offending any of the householders today. So, and the men, the women are in ecstasy. So, So, you know, they're both devotees, and you can love each other. Nothing wrong with love, either. But it's, Prabhupada said, in other cases, when he's talking about marriage, it's like a, he said it's like a partnership. Of course, the man should always be the boss. Oh, sorry. So, it's like a partnership and sharing things. Like, Prabhupada said, friendship and intimacy is the relationship between husband and wife. And they both should be devotees, and their attachment, because the attachment to devotees is very good. Lord Kapiladev describes that the very same type of attachment, when it's reposed in spiritual people or devotees, can be the cause of one's liberation. And then they serve each other. The husband should be serving the wife. Not like in the case of Kashyapa here, you know, whatever the wife wants. Nor should the wife do whatever the husband wants. Like if the husband wants to eat something that's going to kill him, she should refuse to cook it. You understand? And if the wife wants, like here, to kill, you know, Indra, which is what's happening here, the husband should say, it's not a good idea. You know, just like, cool it, lady. You know, so, you know, people will have desires, so it's actually our duty to protect people from, protect the people we care about, whether it's husband, wife, disciple, whatever, protect them from succumbing to material desires. That's protection. You know, the wife may want to go to some, like, South American dance. I forget the name now, you know. In Argentina, what's that dance called?
Tango.
The tango. Oh, my God. Tango. Such a lusty dance, isn't it? I mean, if you look at... I just saw a picture of people tangoing. It's not that I watch things with people tangling, but it was a video about the Catholic Church. it was actually a good video. It was called Two Popes. I don't know if any of you have seen that video. And it showed what was happening in Argentina before the present Pope became Pope. Anyway, because he gave all that up. Anyway, so, you know, if the wife says, I want to tango, you just say, no. Nonsense. You know, so you just, let's chant Hare, let's go to the temple instead and chant Hare Krishna. You know, so, and, or if the husband wants to do something, let me think of some really, really Maya thing that the husband might want to do. I can't think of anything Maya. No, if he wants to go see Star Wars. That's not really Maya. Else I'd be criticizing myself. So anyway, so... So, if the husband wants to do something really bad, then the wife's business is to help the husband. She actually is described elsewhere. The wife is like the person who protects the husband's senses. You know, so she has her duty too. So they're both serving each other. We're servants. And as soon as the husband thinks that I'm the pati guru, he's a rascal. Sorry. As soon as a guru thinks he's the guru, he's a rascal. That's what Bhakti Sananta Saraswati Thakur said. He said, anyone who thinks he's a guru is a guru. That means a cow or an ass. Because we're all servants. What is our... You know, you have to understand these relationships. It should always be one of servitude. Prabhupada said that even if you don't accept that, you're always serving anyway. You're serving your tongue. You're serving your senses. And here Kashyapa is serving Diti's senses, or sense of anger. He's serving her anger towards Indra. So you're always serving. So you might as well recognize that. And instead of involuntarily serving Krishna through his material energy, you serve him directly, and you serve the Vaishnavas. By depending, if a Vaishnava is less advanced, you help them become Krishna conscious. If a Vaishnava is equally advanced, you make friendship. And if a Vaishnava is more advanced or pure, then you actually become their servant. And we're all meant to serve each other. You know, when I'm dealing with devotees, I'm not thinking, you know, I'm the guru or the master. What is that song? Bow down, mister. Boy George song. Hare Krishna, Hare Ram. I'm thinking, you know, I'm meant to serve this devotee. That's it. You know, and that's because we're all Prakriti. You're talking about being women. We're all like that. I mean, maybe not women in the spiritual world, but we're all Prakriti in relationship to Krishna being the Purusha. Mm. Just like that, there's that story that Mirabai, the great Mirabai, she wanted to see Jiva Goswami, and Jiva Goswami said, I don't talk to any women. And she said, well, there's no men in Vrindavan, only Krishna. So you better get used to talking to women. Anyway. So, you know, that's really the point. We're all servants. And the husband should serve the wife. Why should it? And whoever's more advanced, that may be. The wife might be more advanced than the husband. Happens many times. Or the husband may be more advanced than the wife. Whatever. And they should love one each other. They should love each other and be attached. Because that attachment is good. You know, sometimes we find devotees talking about, you know, how you shouldn't love anybody. But, you know, we're supposed to love everybody. And what to speak of your husband and wife, you know. You know, if the wife says, do you love me? You just, what are you supposed to say? You're supposed to say, no, it's Maya. That marriage won't last very long. So, you know, why not love everybody, especially, you know, your husband, wife, children. You know, it's crazy. You know, too much fanaticism too often, isn't it? Too much fanaticism. You're not supposed to love your children. You're just like little byproducts of my sex desire, you know. Imagine telling that to a child. I, for example, my brother was told by my mother, you were just an accident. Can you imagine that? Of course, my parents weren't Krishna conscious, so they didn't say, you know, well, we didn't follow the four regular principles or anything like that. But, you know, it's just like, it's so heartless. It's so heartless, you know, not to love everybody. Or, you know, especially in family life. It's practical. I mean, Prabhupada certainly loved his family. Of course, his wife didn't love back, you know. That was a different issue. Imagine being married to someone like Prabhupada. What a great fortune. And then you sell his Bhagavatams. What kind of love is that? Isn't it? I can't believe it. All right, so all you need is love. So anyway, so here's how to deal with that injunction. Different injunctions for different people. That's all. Very, very simple. But you'll find people taking things out of context. They'll take this one statement, a husband is the supreme demigod for a woman, post it on the wall of their house, you know, and tell their wife that 100 times a day. Prabhupada's instructions. And they don't read the rest of the purport. All right, so any questions or comments? I know it's a little controversial today. Yes. Hopefully we don't get another controversial verse moment here.
Hare Krishna.
Yeah.
I would just like to ask, you mentioned about if one doing mistake and do it all over again, what if someone isn't aware of this? How can he overcome that?
Well, usually you're pretty much aware when you make a mistake. I mean, you see the what we call repercussions or results of the mistake. Like I mean, for example, the other days, someone was driving a car and he forgot to put the seatbelt on and he got a big fine from the police. I think he will remember to put his seatbelt on. If he didn't, he shouldn't be driving a car. If he, after getting fined like 250 euros, I mean, I think he should learn.
And I have one question.
I mean, it's a little mistake. I mean, you make little mistakes like forget which day of the week it is. I mean, that's forget about that one. But, you know, if you make a mistake that causes you some pain or someone else pain, and we all do. Mm-hmm. I don't think anyone here except for someone who is coming from the spiritual world like Prabhupada doesn't make mistakes. And you just learn. I've made so many mistakes in my life. Yeah.
Thank you. I have one question also. You mentioned about demigods.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering how you can engage someone who worship nature but not God.
Encourage them in a spirit of devotion. I said, this is very wonderful. You're worshiping something greater than yourself. I wouldn't criticize them for that. And I would also try to slip in that there is someone in charge of nature. You know, Ham Sarvasya Prabhu, you know, I'm the source of everything. You know, if everything's so beautiful and wonderful here, imagine the person who created it. I mean, if you look at nature, and of course I gave a class about this, I think about a year ago, about how you can understand God by looking at microbiology. Anyway, so. But if you look at nature, how complex it is, even the cell, we discussed the cell, how there's so many mechanisms in the cell, intricate mechanisms, how one cell is more complicated than all the cities in the world combined, then one naturally has to come to the conclusion that someone's behind it, someone's designed it. You know, you see a building. Every time you see a building, unless you see a really weird building, like, you know, design, yeah, then you think, who designed this building? You don't think it happened by chance. So the natural conclusion from appreciating nature is to try to understand who has created it or to understand someone has created it. So I think you just lead them to that conclusion. But don't say, hey, you're worshiping nature. let me mention about the American Indians and like that. I mean, it's wonderful. They were worshiping something greater, the sun and the moon. That's the beginning of God consciousness. And that's not the highest, but it's wonderful. It's simply wonderful. Whereas people think that it's called in the Vedic philosophy, Vaisheshika. I don't know if you've heard of that word before. Vaisheshika is one of the six darshans in the Vedic conclusion, which Prabhupada sometimes translates as atomism. But it's basically modern science. That, and akin to Buddhism, you know, it's very similar. But it means that whatever we see here is just due to the chance interactions or the interactions of the material elements. You know, atoms. Atoms, of course, there's much more than atoms. There's quarks, which make the protons and the neutrons. Anyway, we don't need to discuss that in class. But that, so that in itself is bad. That we can criticize. You know, if you say that life comes from matter, that's pure atheism. But when we talk about something greater or someone greater, we should appreciate that. And if we go into, I mean, sometimes I go to a church just to listen to their music, which is not so much bang, bang, bang like the cartels. But anyway, and it's wonderful. Like Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, we should appreciate that they are, in his Chaitanya Shikshamrita, they are worshiping God, but in a different way than us. They may not have the full conception of God as, you know, the supreme person who is the most attractive, who plays his flute. But it's nice. It's just wonderful how they're worshiping something or someone greater. So we appreciate it. So don't discourage them, but encourage them to work in a spirit of devotion. Krishna says that in the Gita. So any other questions? Yes, Ishwara Buddha.
Hare Krishna, it was very inspiring class for me. And just to share first that when we were coming here, we were just talking about one of your points here, that when someone makes mistakes first time, it should be forgiven. Yeah. Especially here in Slovenia, for those people who are on highways and, you know, charge the people who don't have this small vignetta.
And you didn't have one.
No. We had, but one of our friends didn't have, and he didn't know because it was seventh, or he thought it was seventh, but it was eighth day. So. He really didn't know, and they see it, and they have all listings about him that he had many time passed through Slovenia and always had it, but now it's first time he didn't have a today, and then it is 300 or whatever euros
God.
To pay. So no mercy. And we were just talking about this, how it's important. You know, if someone makes mistake, okay, he makes mistakes first, or she, it's first time, you forgive.
Yeah,
but my question is regarding this.
No, forgiving is always there.
Yes.
But as far as people should correct their mistakes.
Yes.
I mean, I usually forgive people even if they make the same mistake 100 times.
And I would have a question, a short question. It's, you know, about tango and similar stuff. So the question is, you know, sometimes if a lady wants to go for a tango or a man wants to go for a tango, and if the other side say no, right, then he or she today is like that, they will have another partner to go there. And who knows where it can go.
That's true. They should go together. That is true. If she's determined to tango, she should tango with her husband, not with another man. Because it's a very lusty dance. That's true. Thank you for pointing that out. So if any of you ladies want to go tango, do it with your husband. Yeah, so that way the man is protecting his wife. That's true. But if possible, she should not go tango. But, you know, sometimes you got to let people experience. Like I said, people have to experience things because they won't learn by hearing. You know, just like Prabhupada gave the example of his son who always wanted to touch the fan. You know, the fan. And if you actually touch a fan when it's running, you can cut your finger off. You know, they're very dangerous, especially in India, because there's not adequate protection around the fan. So what he did is he unplugged the fan, took it away from the PowerPoint, and then let it slow down a little, and then told his son to put his finger in there. And the son touched it. Ah! And he never went near a fan again for the rest of his life. So sometimes people have to get kicked. But sometimes people get kicked and they come back for more kicking. Like Prabhupada talks about the donkey who approaches the she donkey, and he gets kicked in and he thinks this is love. And he goes... So, I mean, some people don't learn. You get kicked in the face, right? But like when people get drunk, you know, when I went to the university many years ago, before marijuana was invented, people used to drink liquor. They don't anymore, do they? No, they do. Okay. So, not at the university, now they do other things. But anyway, so every Sunday morning when I'd walk out of my door of the dormitory, people would just lie in there. Step over all the bodies. People were miserable. They were vomiting. I mean, it smelled really bad. And I don't know if anyone's seen stuff like that before. It was like Prabhupada when he was in the Bowery preaching, and he had to step over. The bums got out of the way. And so, but then the next week they were doing the same thing. They were miserable. That's called a hangover. You know what a hangover is? Hangover is what happens the next morning after you're drunk. You feel like hell. And they don't learn. Another example, forgive me ladies for this nice example, is that a lady will get married and she'll get pregnant, and it's probably been described to me as the most intense pain anyone's ever experienced. And they'll vow, you know, never again will they get pregnant. And they have another child after that, another. It's just, anyway, I'm not saying that's bad. It's just nature of people. They just forget. Forget pain, you know. And so many examples I can give of people just keep doing the same thing. And was it Einstein? Oh, here. It was Einstein, the great Acharya, who said the definition of insanity is you keep doing the same thing and expect a different result. Isn't it? So, at least we should be sane after the 20th time of doing something wrong and getting fined for not having the vignetta, you know. But Maya's like that. I mean, that's the amazing thing. What's it called? Punak punas charvita charvananam. Isn't it? We're chewing the already chewed. Pulan Maharaj describes this. Matirna krishne parato svatava mido bitpadyeta graha vratanam adanda gopir vishatam tamishram punak punas charvita charvananam. He says those people who don't want to be Krishna conscious, matirna krishne parato, that even if they have good association, you know, even if you try to preach to them or whatever, they'll be engaged in chewing the chewed, doing the same thing and repeating the same activity. Purnak purnas charvita charvananam. So, we don't want to chew the already chewed. You learn. And, you know, we may learn the hard way, but we learn. All right, that's a good question. So, yes, let's go tango. And if we want to go see Star Wars, we should all go together. Have devotee association.
Just to add there is a devotee that they were together, married, and then one of them, and I think it was a lady, she wanted to go for a karate. And not only karate, but also really for fighting and for these competitions and everything. And then he said, okay, let's go. And after 1 month, She came and she said, no, I don't like it. Let's go back in the temple.
That's nice. Yeah, let her exhaust her material stuff. You know, that happens sometimes. At least she didn't use her karate on her husband, you know. You better obey me. So, any questions? Any ladies have questions? No. Anyway, it's an interesting part of the Bhagavatam where you have contrasting different statements, and you got to figure out which one is the right statement to follow in a particular circumstance. Yes?
Thank you for your lecture and your wonderful explanations. I have a question, for example, as you explained this, it's really rational and logic. But what if we are in the lectures where speakers are speaking the opposite things that you are speaking? And how to deal with that?
You can pick it outside the temple. I'm just joking. It's a joke. Lecture unfair to ladies. You know, or whatever. Go on strike or something like that. What can you do? Use your intelligence. You're intelligent. So, read Prabhupada's books, take things in context. And Prabhupada said, blind following and absurd inquiries are condemned. So, you know, we should not, of course, we don't want to criticize devotees. As we mentioned the other day, people do have their own, let's say, opinions, or they're entitled. Everybody has their own nature. And we don't want to criticize that particular person, but we may not agree with them. It's not that you have to blindly agree with everything the person in class says. I mean, of course, when Prabhupada says something, we understand it in context. Let's say if we're a little disturbed that Prabhupada says something that is really, wow, oh my God. Then read more, and you'll actually see that Prabhupada deals with it with that apparent conflict. You know, because Prabhupada deals properly with everything, but he's presenting things from a particular angle of view in each part of the books. And you have to understand what that angle of view is. In this part of the Bhagavatam, also, you know, when Prabhupada talks about the universal form, Krishna presents the universal form. But that's, we don't worship the universal form, but Krishna presents it. So it's different parts of the Shastra. Shastra is meant to be taken as a whole. You understand? Understanding the purpose of the Shastra, and Prabhupada has presented it to us in a very balanced way. So we may not agree with a particular individual's presentation of the Shastra, but Prabhupada's presentation we agree with. I mean, you have to use your intelligence. I remember sitting in one class, and many years ago, before any of you were born, when people were really fanatic, and when Brahmachari or whatever was saying in classes, he said, every time you see a woman, you should spit. You know, he was misquoting from Sripad Yamunacharya. Sripad Yamunacharya stated, since I'm experiencing Navanavarasa, since I'm experiencing more and more a bliss in Krishna consciousness, whenever I think of sex life, I spit. So the person explained that in a way that was actually against women. But that wasn't the point. The whole point was that, you know, he's so attached to Krishna, whenever he thinks of bodily enjoyment, he just, like, doesn't even want to think about it anymore. So people can misinterpret things. It happens. What can I say? Isn't it? I'm not saying that everything I say is absolute truth. I'm trying to repeat Prabhupada's words, and if someone corrects me, I'm happy about it. You know, if I make a little mistake, I'm happy. Well, I'm not saying that I'm perfect. Prabhupada's perfect. And you have the right to go through Prabhupada's books and understand things in context. You know, for example, another example is in the Gita, there's verse, Krishna, it's coming from Krishna. He's quoting demons. He's saying, Ishwaroham aham bhogi siddoham balavan sukhi. The demon is saying, I am perfect, powerful, and happy. You know, Ishwaroham aham bhogi. So you take that verse out of context and say, you know, this is what we should be chanting every day. Ishwaroham aham bhogi. That's Ravana's mantra. His Gayatri mantra. He pulls out his Gayatri thread. Ishwaraham aham bhogi, siddoham balavan sukhi. I'm the controller, I'm perfect, I'm powerful, I'm happy. So things should be understood in the proper context and proper application, and it takes some intelligence how to apply these things. And there will be people with different opinions, and they're entitled to their own opinions. And our movement, as we mentioned the other day in class, will have different branches where people have different understandings of the application of Krishna consciousness. That has happened in every religious society, every society since time immemorial. And if we expect anything different, that's actually unrealistic. To expect, I mean, you look at the Catholic Church. We gave this example the other day, but some of you weren't there. Look at the Catholic Church with all these different branches, the Jesuits and the Carmelites and the Benedictines and, you know, this and that. And you look at, you know, what to speak of the Mormon religion, where you got the Sunnis and the Shiites killing each other. And they all think that Sufis are in Maya. So that's not a good example because, you know, they're fighting with each other. But we should, as Prabhupada said, unity and diversity. You know, appreciate, learn. This is actually going to be our sacrifice for Prabhupada. Learn how to work with diverse opinions and give everybody their space. As long as the Siddhanta, the Tattva is there, then details sometimes can be adjusted. And you know, it's going to happen. You know, we may object to some way or other, you know, that we all just want to have the same exact details be like, this is a repeat of yesterday's statement, but anyway, we may be like little clones for the clone army in Star Wars. You can see I like Star Wars. So, I'm sorry, and Maya. So anyway, but it's not going to be like that. We're all different. And there's going to be different unity and diversity. Prabhupada said the GBC's business is to meet and discuss unity and diversity. How to bring everybody in Prabhupada's house. We don't want anyone to leave Prabhupada's house. I mean, it's disaster. Every time a devotee leaves, it's so painful for me. And what to speak of Prabhupada? How much pain Prabhupada experiences when a devotee leaves. So somehow or other. Anyway, there's a lot more to discuss about this. Oh. Any ball? Actually, some devotees I haven't seen for a while here. Okay, I think it's time for prasadam. Don't try to enjoy your senses. We had one devotee. I mean, just one final thing. That one devotee who was just like so-called renounced, and he refused to eat mangoes because he said mangoes. You know, just like too much renunciation. He said, mangoes are like having sex with your mouth if you eat mangoes. And later on, he got married. But anyways. So, you know, you just don't want to impose renunciation on people. You know, just like chill out, you know, just. Let people be who they are and gradually advance in Krishna consciousness. You know, if someone is not fasting completely on Ekadashi, you know, not drinking water and not eating, let them be. You know, I'm going to take prasadam this morning. I don't know about any of you. Sorry. Okay. but I won't eat grains and beans. Okay, all glory, today's a courtesy. All glories is divine grace to the Prabhupada, Ki Jai.